Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, campers. What's the rumpus?
So, Mr. President, on behalf of the female population on this campus, what is going on with the rapist?
Jesus.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Can't laugh at a rapist. What can you laugh at, folks? This is season 5, episode 23, Love Hurts. That's an unfortunate title for the jokes I just made. Here are your hosts, Harry and Aaron.
Third record of 4. Can we do this? I believe in us.
All right, well, let's skip site biz.
Yeah, okay, let's get to it. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Okay.
Greetings, our site business. End it now.
Let's start with our C story. Jackie's on the hunt again, question mark. At the Peach Pit, where else? Cindy presents Jackie with a list of eligible men for her to date when Mel enters with Aaron. Long story short, Mel and Jackie are vibing on each other again. This scene actually comes at 22 minutes into the episode, which is when I realize we don't see Kelly in this one at all, and I have not missed her.
No.
Cindy later reports to Brandon that Mel's girlfriend dumped him for a younger dentist, so Jackie likes him again. Moving on to our B story.
In the visual aids, we have a picture of whichever Lawrence this is.
Matthew. Mitchell.
Yeah. I always guess wrong. Sorry, Matthew Lawrence. giving Jackie the panty dropper x-ray, mm-hmm. and it is titled Sproing.
It is.
And... yeah, no doubt as to why. Anyway, B story.
Moving on to Andrea's love life actually manages to make it to B because it ends. Spoiler alert. Andrea's love life blows up on her dumb ass. So Andrea leaves her friends from the student union when she gets beeped, quote, by the hospital. But really, she's getting beeped by Peter because we next see her knocking on the door at their motel room. Woo! Dylan is once again hanging out with Charlie, or rather annoyingly loitering while Charlie types his screenplay on a manual typewriter, which is predictably a topic of conversation in clip number 2.
Whoa, Charlie, what are you doing? This is almost the 21st century, man. You gotta embrace the technology.
No. Imagine Raymond Chandler on a laptop.
There's so much to unpack in this clip.
Yeah, I'll say.
Starting with the Scotty impression. No.
Computer.
We've heard it before.
He's making
it, at least it's improved.
Sorry, Sarah. Talked over you.
Was it him doing it before or was it Brandon? I don't even remember.
No, it was him.
Ugh. Both of them are terrible. Also, if they could, all of those writers, Raymond Chandler et al., they would use laptops. Stop romanticizing. You don't know what you're talking about. Muses aren't real either. All of this, like the trappings of writing, just makes everyone know you are not writers.
You know what I don't miss?
Yes, Dave.
Liquid paper. Remember
liquid paper? Of course
what
I do.
What a fucking pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You put it on, you're like, yay, and you're like eager to get on with it because you have to correct it before you go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not quite dry. And your pen just kind of
squishy.
Moves it like,
yeah.
You know how paint sometimes dries in the paint pan where it's sort of like a little wave? Yeah, it's like that. It's terrible.
Do you think they even make liquid paper anymore?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure there's grandpa out there.
Yeah.
Or white out, I guess it's called here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think liquid paper is a Canadian name.
Is it, Sarah?
It'd be good nail polish.
Do you have liquid paper here or is it just called white out?
I think... both.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. I haven't laid eyes on it in probably 15 years.
And
so
smell?
I'm not sure.
You know that office supply store in Kona, Dave? Yeah. They probably still have it. And it's probably all dried up.
I was going to say it's like a solid. Yeah, it's something you throw at people's foreheads now.
There's a store, this office supply store in Kona that I love. It's like completely windowless. Like it's so old school. Like it makes me want to only buy office supplies there from now to the end of time.
It's like your local hardware store where you have to ask Ralph where everything is because only Ralph understands his sorting system.
It's like the antique office supplies place. Like, you know, those like round wheels of eraser with like a brush on them. I'm sure they have those there too. All of those antique things that no one needs.
This has been obsolete. Office Supply Talk with Tara, Dave, and Sarah. I hope you will subscribe to this new podcast.
Moving on. Charlie refuses to tell Dylan what he's working on, but then fishes for Dylan to ask him about it, annoyingly. Charlie should have trusted his first instinct and not said anything, but he doesn't, as we hear in clip number 3.
I'll see. Without getting too far into the plot, you know, it starts off like your basic hard-boiled detective story until the main character starts having these really radical dreams about his past lives. And I've lost you already, right?
No, you didn't lose me. I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, make yourself at home. You could help with the screenplay if you want to.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have a look at it, see what I can do.
Yeah. Hey, what?
See what you can do? That's not how writing together works.
No. Also,
I mean, we share a brain, so I don't know how it actually works for, like, humans, but...
Yes, but also this ignores the fact that Dylan is not a writer. Like, this is... He has nothing to contribute. Anyway, Charlie repeats what he said
money.
In the last episode.
Let him produce your screenplay with his money.
Right.
That's what he's for.
Yeah. Charlie repeats what he said in the last episode, which is that the motel is a good place to write because of the few demands the job makes on his time, because the people who stay there are just stopping in to fuck. Just then, a guest comes out to prove Charlie's point in clip number 4.
Look at her. She's trying to be casual. She's hoping nobody sees her.
It's Andrea!
30 seconds later, he comes out of the same room. They act like they don't know each other, and they drive off in different directions. That's pretty wild, huh?
Never seen him before.
Just the guy. He paid for the week. You know he's getting his money's worth.
Ew.
Yeah, gross.
Banana? Gross.
I mean, her hair is wet, so because she took a shower, that means? I don't know. Anyway, she looks very guilty, as you can see in the visual aids at previously.tv. But yes, Dylan is stricken to see his married friend coming out of this fuck shop with Peter close behind. Moving on. The next day, Dylan meets Andrea at the student union to tell her he saw her coming out of the motel, and he promises that he's the only one who knows. She is ashamed and says it's not what he thinks, that she's in love with him, Peter. Dylan asks if Jesse is happy about it, and her non-answer tells him that Jesse doesn't know. Dylan promises never to bring it up again if she doesn't want him to, and she whimpers that it wasn't something she planned. She thinks Peter was like a miracle, and was she supposed to ignore her feelings? Dylan is...
Yes.
Yeah. Dylan is actually kind of an okay friend about it in clip number 5.
It just seems that sneaking around is not the best way to build a solid relationship.
This is the voice of experience speaking, huh?
Andre, I'm not going to judge you. I just wanted to let you know that I know. That way, if you want to talk about it, we can talk. End of story, okay?
Okay. End of story.
Great, end of story. We never have to talk about this again. Thank God.
Yeah. But I will say, honestly, unlike most of the goobers on this show, when Dylan says he doesn't judge, he is like the only one who is credible saying it, I have to say.
Yeah.
Like,
possibly because he doesn't actually care that much. But like, as obnoxious as he can frequently be on just about every other axis, he isn't really judgy.
Yeah. No, he's not. He, of all the people that could have spotted her doing this, he's like probably the best option.
Totally.
All things considered. That night, Jesse is yelling at Andrea for not having deposited some paycheck of his, and it turns into a fight about who is or is not reliable in their marriage. He tries to postpone the fight until after they get back from dinner at his mother's, which Andrea forgot, but she gets excused due to her bad attitude, which is encapsulated in a gorgeous screen grab that Sarah got of Andrea, like, fully unloading with her arms outstretched, like, screaming at Jesse. It's great.
And who among us has not felt that way about having dinner with our mother-in-law?
Cough.
Definitely not me.
Me neither. Dylan and Charlie chat over Indian food about Charlie's time in India and his belief in reincarnation. There's also a bad Indian accent performed by Charlie, which I did not clip. A car pulls into the parking lot and Charlie immediately recognizes it as Peter's. Dylan is dismayed. And then Peter is letting himself into the motel room hornily. He immediately starts getting down to it, but Andrea doesn't want to rush in clip number 6.
Peter, we have to talk. We can't continue this way.
Well, I thought we already talked. I'm not giving you up, and you're not giving me up. Unless something's changed.
Well, something has changed.
Oh.
But it's good. I'm leaving Jesse.
What?
I've been living a lie all this time. I can't do it anymore. I'm married to one man, and I'm in love with another. It's not fair to either of you, and it's definitely not fair to me.
Wait a minute. When did you decide this?
Well, it's been growing. It's obvious. It's been going on for a long time.
We know.
Peter, I'm unhappy with Jesse, and you're unhappy with Adrian. There's no reason we should be unhappy separately when we can be happy together.
Andrea, I'm sorry. But I'm not unhappy. In fact, I'm delighted with the perfect arrangement we've got here. No one gets hurt and there are no strings. Isn't that part of what makes it fun?
Fun? I thought you wanted strings. I thought you wanted to be with me.
Yeah, but Adrian put me through med school, and it'll be years before I'm making any real money as a doctor. I couldn't leave her if I wanted to. And I don't want to.
I see.
Look, Andrea.
Don't touch me.
Hey, don't make me the bad guy here, okay? I never promised you anything.
Oh, no, you promised a lot. Maybe not in words, but you promised.
You know, dick promises.
Where to begin? I mean, like, why she assumed that he was unhappy in his marriage just because he bitched about his wife. Like, no, he's just horny. Like, you were around. Yeah. This doesn't necessarily mean he wanted a divorce, especially if he never said it or you never talked about it.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. I mean, I don't have much to say because it's all in that clip that he's like, this is on you. And she's like, you promised. And he's like, a boner is not legally binding.
No.
Sorry.
There are a whole bunch of boners or a motel room key.
A whole bunch of boners.
Anyway, Dylan squints sadly as Peter peels out of the parking lot, and then he runs out to catch and comfort Andrea, and she admits to Dylan how dumb she is in clip number 7.
Dylan, I don't even know who I am.
Nobody does really, babe. Nobody does.
And then she continues to sound like a nursing puppy for 10 years, and now the storyline is over. Or is it? It isn't. Let's move on.
Okay, so to our A story, there's still a psycho on campus. At the good old student union, Donna is ranting to Steve about Val firing Ray, while Andrea watches not caring. Donna gesticulates so widely that she knocks over her drink, and that balding guy who said hi to Lenny last week is suddenly there, but he's probably just the student union's Gunther, so don't worry about it, doesn't mean anything. Brandon Brandon shows up to get grilled by Andrea about matters he has no way of influencing, i.e. the rape investigation. He claims not to know anything, but then admits that Lenny isn't the culprit. Steve says the frats are organizing patrols to escort women. Uh-oh. Brandon promises that the student senate is going to respond today. And then some generic grungy band is auditioning for an unimpressed Claire and Val, who finally tell them to stop. Please go to the visual aids at previously.tv because Sarah captured their incredible genericness in one beautiful screenshot. Very important.
It's just so much 90s and on one stage.
Yeah.
Surprised that like a inception or like a tear in the fabric of time wasn't created. It's a lot.
Yeah. And then the next auditioners are caked in mud because, as Claire says, they're keeping the spirit of Woodstock alive. But Woodstock, it was Woodstock 94. Like, this was before. Anyway, whatever.
Exactly.
David picks up Lenny from the cop shop to drive him back to campus. David was sure Lenny wasn't the rapist, and in the car he finally tells David his sketchy backstory, which is after Desert Storm he was stationed at Fort Bragg. Everyone was acting crazy. Lenny was on leave with some other guys from his unit, and they were drunk and strolling the streets for hookers. Some of the guys got a little gung-ho is how he put it, and he woke up the next morning arrested for rape, which got plea bargained down to sexual assault. I thought that was the same thing, but okay. But it's still on the record, and he's a registered sex offender. He did 2 years in a federal brig and feels like he probably shouldn't. I feel like he probably shouldn't be living in a co-ed college dorm, but then I don't know what the mandatory disclosure laws were then either. David is sorry to hear about all that and says he has made something of his life. Lenny made the dean's list last year, but Lenny says it doesn't matter. Whenever anyone at CU commits a sex crime, he is suspected. Speaking of, time to watch people yell at each other at the CU Student Senate. Our old friend Janice is holding court about Lenny and his enrollment at the school, which she says indicates CU's lack of respect for women. Dean Whitmore yells at her for repeating Lenny's name, but she says she didn't start the leak and that everyone already knew. The dean says that Lenny is no longer a suspect. He had an alibi that checked out and the victim was positive it wasn't him. Brandon is a genius and should probably transfer to pre-law in clip 8.
So the rapist could still be on the campus.
Brandon, let's not fuel the fire with reckless speculation.
What's so reckless about assuming if there's one rape, there could be another?
And another.
Lieutenant Smith and I are here today to assure you that we are doing everything within our power to make sure it is business as usual on this campus.
With all due respect, sir, business as usual usually means cutbacks and no student involvement in the decision-making process. Right. I don't want to grandstand here, but 2 months ago, we unanimously passed a 10-point program to improve campus security. What happened to that?
Yes, but unfortunately, you gave us no recommendations on how to fund your program, and you'd be all over us if it meant raising your tuition.
Nonetheless, at this point, what Janice and Patricia want to know is, do the police have any suspects or any leads? Oh, that about sums it up, doesn't it?
Not really. The police are not required to comment on an ongoing investigation, especially not to the miniature likes of you.
Yes.
Yep.
Also, why, like, that Brandon is, like, trying to puff his chest out about, like, we've unanimously passed a series of recommendations, and the dean's like, paid for by what? Nothing? Got it. Like, that's not helpful or how politics works.
Yeah, I screen grabbed a look of flat loathing from the dean to yes. Brandon that I really enjoyed gazing yep. upon.
It's perfect. Shorter, shut up, Brandon. You're not an ally to women. Then Donna stops Nat on the way to bringing a tray up to Val because she's still waiting for an audience with her. And just then that balding dude from the student union walks in. Donna recognizes him from there. He asks if she's Claire, but she introduces herself as Donna. He says he was hoping to talk to Claire about a job. Donna says that Val is in charge now and throws mild shade at her. She doesn't know if Val is hiring, but when Nat comes out and tells her that Val is ready for her, Donna offers to let this dude go talk to Val first. He declines, but introduces himself as Garrett Slan. I think that's what he says. Anyway.
Yeah, what?
He's
like, of all the names, why not the one that doesn't exist? Okay.
Yeah. And as Donna goes, he gives her a super creepy look. Okay, and not to... there's really no way to segue to this, so I'll just say it. We next see Donna in Val's office, and she's sitting, and her nipples are visible through her top, and they are pointing the wrong way. You and I both captured different shots of them, so I composited them together, but in both cases they are not where they should be. It's bad.
Marty Feldman nipples?
No, they're just both pointed down. Anyway, I can't describe it without getting really offensive, so you'll just have to look at the pictures that I took instead, because I guess
it's like
better.
The meat of the breast is facing forward,
right?
But the nipples are facing the floor,
are looking at the floor, as it were.
Oh my, just walked right into that, didn't
they? Oh my god. Fuck. Anyway, in her office, Val expertly takes control of the conversation in clip 9.
Listen, I'm really glad you stopped by. I feel like I've been flying solo here and I could really use your help. Besides, I want you to hear my new message and you tell me what you think, okay? Hey, After Darkers. A major recording artist will be here Friday night. I could tell you who, but it wouldn't be any fun, would it? Anyway, you know where to find us, and you know when. After dark, when else? So, what do you think?
I think you're an incredibly cruel human being.
Ooh.
Not as cruel as whoever gave you that boob job.
Honestly. Anyway, Val doesn't know what Donna is talking about, so she says that Ray should be playing there Friday and that he would be if Val hadn't fired him. But Val claims that David is the one who said the club would die without new blood. Donna is surprised to hear this. Val says that she likes Ray and his music and his dick. Just kidding, she doesn't say that part. And that he needs to play other venues in order to grow as an artist. And Donna agrees that she's right and immediately backs down. Val insists that Ray needed to get out of there, and Donna, fully handled, agrees to help Val eat her lunch. And then Donna pokes her head out to get Garrett, but he's gone. She thinks her backpack is gone also, but it's just on the floor beside the speaker where she left it. She's alarmed, but turns out nothing is missing. Then on campus, Steve pulls up to Val in a golf cart. He's on the escort patrol. He borrowed it from Rush's country club, apparently, and in exchange, Steve has to play a tournament with him in Palm Springs, so I guess that is a storyline that's coming, maybe? Question mark? Who cares? Stupid golf.
Neat.
There's also a Forrest Gump impression, because the 90s. Val is there on campus to try and get him to help her find a decent actor to replace Ray at the Peach Pit. He says he can't get involved, even though we see him at the Peach Pit all the time. She promises to make it worth his while, just in time for him to almost hit a pedestrian, which I guess is stuff, but like, if you got hit by a golf cart, you would still be very badly injured. It's not really that funny. And then, speaking of not that funny, we're seeing Lenny getting hounded across campus by a screaming mob. And then Amy, who said in the last episode that she was moving back in with her parents, yet is still there, gloats to David that Senior Perverto is moving out. David and his bad teen stash find Lenny very carefully packing his records and have an asinine conversation in clip 10.
Lenny, what's going on?
Simple. I'm getting out of Dodge City.
Why? You were clear. I mean, who cares what girls like Amy Houseman have to say? You have a right to be here.
Why don't you try walking across campus with me? Feels like everyone knows who I am and what I did. Best thing for me is to slink out the back door and not come back.
It's funny, but I think the best thing for you to do is fight. You have rights.
Maybe I don't want to be the poster child for ex-con rights, okay?
Look, Lenny, I understand what you're going through, all right? But I have a lot of pull on this campus. I mean, I know all the media people. I mean, hell, the student body president is one of my best friends.
Look, I appreciate the concern. I really do, but...
But what?
There's just some other stuff going on here. So just let it die, will you?
What other stuff?
Look, I can't talk about it, okay?
You trying to tell me you did it?
Yeah, okay.
What if I did? You know, when you've been in prison, you find out that even the guilty needs someone to believe in them.
Then let me talk to some people. Just give me a day to work on this, all right?
I mean, I understand that they're doing this to, like, pad out the episode and sort mm-hmm. of get to the point where, whatever, dramatic irony, blah. Mm-hmm. It really drives me fucking crazy. And only on TV does, in this situation, only on TV would the character like speak in these weird vague riddles instead of just being like, no, I didn't do it. Fuck you for asking.
Yeah. Also, the only thing sadder than Brandon acting like a power broker is David acting like he's a power broker in law because he knows Brandon.
I know.
Oh, you are ridiculous.
Actually, there is one more thing that's sadder, and that's his facial hair. Give up.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yourself. You can see that in the visual aids too. Just don't be eating while you do it.
If you dare.
So then Steve totally comes through for Val with a musical act, but before he can tell her how, she gets rid of him in favor of the guy from William Morris who's in her office, and Steve is pissed. Then David lets himself into the beach apartment, picking up a baseball bat that just happens to be by the door. Wonder if that will come up later. Claire comes out looking the worst she's literally ever looked. I hope she burned that top. Please go to the visual aids and see it. It is so unflattering. It's like a sequined polo top, but it makes her look three times as wide as she actually is. It's horrible. The bat is explained as being Donna's for the alpha softball team that she's apparently on. Okay. Claire tries to start something up with David, but he is on a tight deadline. He's gotten approval from Walter Chen to do a profile on Lenny to rehabilitate his image, but Claire or Donna has to help him, and Claire's like, no. David starts whining at her to convince her, and Claire cites his history of violence towards women and suggests he can go to college in an estrogen-free environment. And then Donna in her newsboy outfit, which you can also see in the visual aids, come around the corner to yell at David for selling out Ray to Val, and things escalate quickly in clip 11.
Donna, look.
No looks. You sandbagged Ray with Valerie because you're jealous that he has abandoned you.
No,
don't.
No, I want you to slow yourself down, all right? I'm here just to help an innocent guy catch a break, and you're sitting here yelling at me about something that didn't.
David, look.
No, you look, all right? Mm-hmm. You become such a self-involved bitch, such a pale version of what you used to be. I don't know what I ever saw in you in the first place.
Okay.
Oh boy, I hope these two aren't in a fight forever. Cough. Oh boy. And then we see the psycho putting together his rape go bag, which includes a piece of junk mail with Donna's address on it, and as Sarah captured for the visual aids, a copy of the TV classic Playpen magazine is next to it on the bed.
Not to be confused with its hardcore cousin, Punt House.
Yes, indeed. And then there's not much to this scene at the Peach Pit except that Steve makes it into the B-roll of a news report on his golf cart, plus this clip 12.
The police department refuses to comment on the progress of their investigation into the rape on the CU campus last week.
The rape.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. See my previous comments. Mm-hmm. Fuck that.
And then someone is smashing the glass and letting himself in at the beach apartment. Surprise, not a surprise, it's Garrett. And then, God, we have to hear Brandon on the phone getting a tongue bath from Janice, who's saying that she and Alex Diaz would both support him if he ran for president again the next year. Please, God, no. David comes over to ask Brandon to talk to Lenny about not dropping out of school, and Brandon agrees. And then David leaves. Like, does Brandon know where Lenny is? How is this a plan? Whatever. Somehow, Brandon does find Lenny.
I guess he's
going
to follow the torches. Like,
true.
Maybe an address? True. I don't know.
But anyway, somehow Brandon does find Lenny when he's leaving his dorm room. Lenny knew Brandon was coming and is sarcastic about his reasons for being there in clip 13.
Oh, I know who you are. You're David's friend. Mr. Student Body here to tell me what a bright future I have at CU.
No, actually, I was going door to door selling magazines.
Oh, well, appreciate you taking the time, but I was heading out to buy some smokes.
Mind if I head out with you?
What's the matter? You don't trust me prowling around the campus at night by myself?
You gotta be careful. There's a rapist out there.
That was actually a pretty good line.
It is, but, you know, the idea of a man getting raped being hilarious is, you know, not the best, but it's the 90s.
Well, and also that the minuscule Brandon escorting the regulation size grown up in his mid-20s, Lenny. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, outside, they discuss the investigation. Lenny judges the rapist a psycho because when he was in custody, he heard what the guy did to Melody. Lenny got off because Melody knew him and that he wasn't the culprit. But Lenny doesn't have much faith in the investigation, as he says in clip 14.
The cop that questioned me is a real lightweight. There's hundreds of questions he could have asked me. He didn't think about it.
Like what?
I don't want to get into it.
Then why'd you bring it up?
As president of this school, what kind of clout do you carry with these guys?
Well, Dean Whitmore is a pretty good friend, and in some circles I'm known as the chancellor's lackey.
What about the cops?
You need to talk to a lawyer?
You want one of these?
No, thanks. Lenny, tell me what you know.
I know who raped Melody.
It was cigarettes. Mr. Morley, I see you.
Oh my God, brilliant. Then Donna comes home into total darkness. She gets a flashlight out of the drawer and Garrett is there. He grabs her pretty quickly. I don't want to talk about this because even in the context of this dumb show, it's upsetting and awful and bad. And when he uncovers
her... she does try pretty well to deploy her like self-defense techniques that she learned in that class with and Cindy and Brenda Thong.
Yep. But when he uncovers her mouth, she says, Garrett, please. But he tells her to call him by his real name, which is Warren. I don't know why this detail came up. Like it's hardly part of the story. But anyway, apparently the band that Val got via William Morris was the Flaming Lips, who do not appear in this episode on the DVD at all. But apparently they were there. So Flaming Lips, everybody. Sounds like they were great. The end of that storyline. Brandon brings a detective to warn Claire that the cops think she's being stalked by the campus rapist. Which is when Val comes up to ask what's going on. And when Brandon tells her Garrett's name, she remembers it as the name of Donna's, quote, friend, unquote. Cut to Garrett in Donna's bathroom, shaving, still with gloves on. She's on the bed, bound and gagged. But as soon as he comes in, he cuts the rope and is all relaxed. She asks him not to hurt her and tells him to take anything he wants. And then she says, I've never done this before, which is a very upsetting way to put it. And a very irresponsible conflation of rape and sex. Not that I would expect this show to get it right, but still bad, very bad. But Garrett can't believe she's still a virgin and calls her a little tramp, also bad, but also gets even more agitated. And at this point, David lets himself into the apartment and starts calling out for her. And if you remember one thing about the episode, it might be this clip 15. It's a long one.
Go away, David. I don't want to talk to you.
Donna, I know you don't, especially after the way I spoke to you this afternoon. I've just been under a lot of pressure.
Well, can we talk about it tomorrow?
I just can't stand you thinking I'm the only one who got Ray fired. It's not true.
Okay, Dave. We'll talk about it tomorrow, I promise.
All right. What's up with the lights?
I've got a migraine, and you're making it worse.
Sorry. Can I get you anything?
No, Dave. Just go.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, it's too bad Dave spoiled the moment. Looks like we're gonna have to make it quick. Oh, it's your first time. No!
Oh boy. So that was Donna saving herself by calling David Dave.
If this has done nothing else, this episode is super problematic, obviously, but I do feel like this told a generation like how to do this, like mm-hmm. use some nickname for this person that they never heard before so that they're like, oh yeah, the 90210 trick.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the worst thing. It's news you can use.
No, it's true. And Donna picks up David initially, like, sort of knocks him down with the baseball bat, and then Donna goes to town on him with like some knickknack that's nearby, and like really, like at the end of it, he's lying there with blood coming out of his head, like he might be dead. It's not actually clear. Like, I mean, at the end,
David takes his sweet time stopping her from doing it too, which it was nice.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, let her get her licks in. I'd yep. appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And then later, the cops are in the apartment investigating everything. Brandon, who is there for no reason, says that Lenny told him that Garrett was in the military prison with him. And then they found each other again at school, clip 16.
Well, it turns out Garrett was picking his brain about all the co-eds at CU.
Do not fucking call women co-eds. It's not 1961.
No, in the 90s. Anyway.
Also, what are you doing there?
Yeah, what is he doing there?
A, like, presidential citizen's arrest? Go home.
Honestly.
Fucker.
Lenny didn't say anything about Garrett sooner because he was scared of being hauled in as an accomplice for not having said anything originally. And David is surprised that Lenny opened up to Brandon. But it's so, excuse me, Brandon could help him transfer to another school in the CU system, which he will. He deserves a break. I mean, okay. Like, Lenny's part of the whole, like, previous rape conviction was super sketch anyway. Like, even if he wasn't guilty in this case, like, whatever. I don't want to get into a whole discussion of, like, rehabilitation, but Lenny didn't seem like he was completely innocent of everything in his life either.
And we never saw him again.
David brings Donna water and she thanks Dave. And he says it was smart of her to bust out that amazing code. She's sorry that she broke the figurine from the carnival. He says he can't believe she kept it, but she says it was the last thing he ever gave her. Oh, question mark. Anyway, that's the end of the episode. Bye, campus rapist. And then there were never any rapes on campus again. Cough. Anything else to add before we wrap it up?
Nope.
We're always happy just off screen.
Yep. MVP of the episode. Donna, she saved herself.
Yeah, did it very absolutely. Well.
Yep.
And then, like, having saved herself, she opened a can and a half of whoop ass on old Garrett / Warren.
Yes.
I'm least, with it.
Yep, least valuable player. I mean, I'm going to say Garrett with an assist from Lenny for not having said anything about, like, I think this guy might be the guy before he attacked a second woman that we know of.
Yeah. And also, I don't know. I'm going to actually give it fully to Lenny.
Yeah.
Garrett is clearly mentally ill. Like, not that he's not responsible for his actions, but Lenny's like, well, I don't want to get in more trouble. Like, okay, but dude.
Agree. I have the Kim challenge in here, but I feel like that was a mistake from the previous talk. So let's do the Moo Moo Parker challenge.
Okay.
Five reasons from this episode that Brandon might have ended up dead, caught in crossfire at the crime scene he should not have been at. Maybe.
Lit on fire by Dean Whitmore's glare.
Drowned by Janice's slavering praise of him in the drool that she was drooling on him because all of a sudden he's her favorite guy.
Bashed in the head by Knick Knack by Donna for intruding on her upsetting moment.
Garrotted by Garrett. I just said that because garrot is fun to say, and his name is Garrett. That makes five.
And it's episode 3 of 4, and that's how it is. Next time on Again With This. Find out what happens when 6 non-strangers pick to fake a media studies assignment for Claire and David, stop being polite, and start getting real. Puck Rain sues for libel is what? You'll sue us for retinal harassment when you get a load of our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other Again With This episode on our website at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv and this podcast specifically at AWT90210. I'm moonlighting crack dealer Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. Playpen back issue Tara Ariano is my co-host, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And voice of experience David T. Cole is our producer. He's on Twitter at Glark. Talk to you next time.
I'm not doing this again on purpose.
Hi, you know what to do after the beep and Rooney.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.